Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. Chris and Tom Levy are joining me today. We are going to be talking about the Foundation Stock Service provided by the American Kennel Club. And this particular area is one that not very many of us know a whole lot about. And basically what happens, the American Kennel Club provides this service to allow purebred breeds to continue to develop while providing them with security of a reliable and reputable avenue to maintain their registration records. And Chris and Tom are great guests for us to talk to because they've just been through this process with the PUMIC. Yes, I said that correctly?
That's right.
Yay, I did it right. Okay, so one of our brand new breeds that's just been recognized by the American Kennel Club this year. I think they are so incredibly adorable. They look like little koala bears. I can't stand it. So Chris and Tom, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. And let's talk about PUMIC and let's talk about the Foundation Stock Service.
Okay, well, just as a clarification, PUMIC, which is P-U-M-I-K, is the Hungarian plural for the actual name of the breed, which is PUMI, P-U-M-I. They are a Hungarian herding breed, very closely related to the Puli, which also has a plural of Pulik.
Correct. And so does Commandora and Commandorok, if I remember correctly.
That's correct. And Kuvas and Kuvasok.
Exactly. And so tell me just really briefly, what got you started with PUMI?
I had miniature schnauzers at the time, and I went to the World Dog Show in Helsinki, Finland, to watch the miniature schnauzers. And I saw three PUMIC coming down the hall towards me, and it was truly love at first sight. We had some Hereford cattle at the time and had been looking for a herding breed. And so I went home and told Tom, and it was about a year later that we had our first PUMI puppy.
Okay, and what year was that?
That was 1999 when we got the puppy.
1998 when you went to the World Show.
Right.
Very cool. And so have you used your PUMIC as herding dogs with your cattle?
Yes, I did. That was the original reason to get one, and I was using two of them. They taught me how they herd, but it was very interesting is in 2000, the night before I was leaving for the World Dog Show, the cattle got out. So I took the dog, got them back in, and after going through the brush, I spent the entire night deburring and bathing the dog before I flew out.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
But we're using them on sheep now. They were developed for cattle, sheep, and swine. They've also been used totally informally trained on chickens, rabbits, and even cats.
Wow. Well, there you go. Herding dogs herd things.
That's right. And children, too.
Yes, definitely children. Okay, so talk to me then. So you found this fabulously cool breed. And at the time that you acquired yours in 1999, how many of those were in the United States at that time?
Two or three.
Wow. Okay.
There were not very many. There was a breeder who had had a litter maybe 10 years previously, but she had only had that one litter. And we know there were some in the country that had been brought in by Hungarians, you know, just as their pets. But two were imported about the time of that 1998 World Show by Show and Ohio, and then later we got ours. But it was basically three at that time.
That's just amazing. Three of them in the whole country. And so I noticed when I looked, I saw that you're the president of the PUMIC Club of America. Is that correct?
That's true.
Okay.
So you have been through this entire process, 17 years of developing this breed in this country and creating a national club and creating American Kennel Club recognition for this breed. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are working with new and rare breeds who would really love to hear your story and how that process went.
Well, it took us a while to get organized. Obviously, with only three people, we weren't too interested in organizing. But it was about 2005 where there were enough people, a few more had been imported. We had had a litter by that time that people were talking about forming a club. And at the time, my argument was we didn't have enough people to form a board of directors, much less have a club. But the point was made and well taken that we needed a point of contact for AKC and that we also, that would allow us to do some education. But let me step back for just a minute. It was, I believe, in 2002 where we had our first litter and we were concerned about being able to show those puppies in Europe. We didn't have a registry at that time. And so it was about 2002 that we applied to AKC to come into the Foundation Stock Service. And I think there was like about that time maybe 20 that were registered, maybe 15, I can't remember for sure. But any dog can be registered with the Foundation Stock Service even if it has died of old age. So we wanted to have those dogs registered. So the lady that had had the litter 10 years prior to our finding about the breed did register her puppies with the Foundation Stock Service too. But that was just to get started. It was either that or us do our own registrations, and I knew who would end up doing that, and I didn't want to. So it was much, much easier to have AKC do it, and then it would be very, very simple once we got regular status to just move those dogs over into AKC's registry. So they provide everything as far as registration is concerned. It's similar to AKC registration. You have a litter application, and you have individual registrations, and registration forms for registering imported dogs. It's very similar, but not the same as the AKC process. So that was our first FSS, more as a record. And so we did that for a while. I'm not sure. There were a few more dogs that were imported at that time, but it wasn't until then, 2005, which is, 6 years after we got ours, that we decided to form the club.
One thing I'd like to add, too, on the FSS, AKC does not call it a registration. They call it a listing. And because of this, some countries do not recognize it. And it may be necessary to register dogs in an FCI country, or if the breed is recognized in Canada, register it there. But typically, most dogs that are FSS can be registered in Puerto Rico.
So one of the things that I did early on was write to probably about 15 or 20 countries, to the kennel clubs in those countries, and ask if they would recognize a Foundation Stock Service pedigree. And I think two or three replied that they would. We knew that Puerto Rico would. I think it was Sweden that would. And then we went down to show in Mexico, because when you have a rare breed, there's no place to show locally except for a rare breed show. At that time, they didn't have some of the other international kennel clubs that they do now. So we showed in Mexico, and they recognized the pedigree. So once he had a Mexican FCI pedigree, then we could show them elsewhere. As far as the rare breed shows are concerned, they don't care as much. But FCI, in the majority of cases, is looking for an AKC registered dog.
Or an FCI registered dog, and that is either Mexico or Puerto Rico. In Mexico, you have to go to Mexico. I believe you can do it by mail with Puerto Rico.
So it's made it interesting for us because we wanted to be able to take dogs that we had bred and show them in Europe, because that's where we went to learn more about the breed and to import more dogs. And I think eventually Hungary also, which of course is where the Pumi is from, recognized our Foundation Stock Service pedigrees too.
Okay, so you've imported more dogs, you've bred a litter. How many Pumic do you have now?
We have, as of last October when I checked with AKC, there were 365 registered pummies.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty impressive in 15 years.
Well, we've had over 15 years a number of litters, and I figured out about a year ago that we had contributed approximately 90 of them.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Yeah, when you add up.
It's a lot of work.
Well, that's over a lot of years, too. But to start with, it was very difficult to even find homes for puppies. Nobody knew about the breed. You know, our very first litter, I think there were five. Tom's business partner took one. We kept two. A lady in Colorado got one, and then we kept one around for about 6 months, and then a friend of a friend decided that they wanted one. But it was very, very difficult to place the puppies. Nobody knew to ask.
Right, exactly. And so this is a breed, from my understanding of what you're saying, this is a breed that's pretty old in Hungary, correct?
Yes, it's been around as a Hungarian herding dog for several hundred years. The Pumi is from Western Hungary, the Puli is from Eastern Hungary, and then there's a third Hungarian herding breed, the Mudi, which is from Southern Hungary.
And haven't I seen that the Mudi is now also in FSS? Did I see that coming up through the pipeline?
They are in FSS, yes. They're working on they're progressing. But I think they have about 50 or 60 dogs in the country, so it's going to be a little while.
But the interesting thing is the Mudi is recognized in Canada, where the Pumi
right.
is not.
It just depends on who supports the breed.
Fascinating. And so give me some basic outline. I mean, how many dogs do you have to have? How many generation pedigrees? How many,
right, okay.
you know, what's your process through AKC?
Well, there's quite a process, and they actually have the process listed on AKC's website. If you go out to
okay,
the
great.
Area
so
on.
We'll provide a link for that in our show notes for
oh,
sure.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. So there's really two tracks that are going on. One is getting the breed recognized, and the other one is getting the club recognized. So in the list of things that you have to do, AKC kind of mixes up all of the club stuff and the breed stuff. But kind of please understand that there's really two tracks, because you want to get the breed recognized by doing things, but you also want to get the club recognized so that it can eventually hold AKC shows or other events.
And one thing about this two-track, then you are working with two different departments at AKC as well.
Yeah, that's kind of towards the end of the process. So what you have to do to start with is let AKC know that you've got a club formed. I mean, obviously, we had already done that, which is you apply for the breed to get Foundation Stock Service recognition. And then once the club is formed, you let them know that you have formed and that you would be the point of contact. Occasionally, you'll get breeds that have more than one parent club formed, and AKC will allow that to continue up to a point where they will select one parent club, because there can only be one parent club in the United States for a breed. So you need to submit paperwork to AKC with your, you know, your constitution and bylaws and your membership lists, and show that you are doing activities. Most of what our club did to start with was a lot of meet the breeds, because what we were doing was trying to introduce the breed to people in the United States. So we did the major meet the breeds in Orlando, well, it was in Long Beach at the time, and the New York meet the breeds, and then we did several in the Pacific Northwest, and just got our dogs out there as much as we could.
Okay, so as you're going through this process, I remember, okay, I'm from the Northwest, I remember watching you guys bring these cute little dogs around, and like, wow, those are fascinating, what in the world? Did you get a lot of reaction from the dog show community or more from the general public?
Both. To start with, after we had our first dog, we had to convince our friends that this was actually purebred, because they're so cute. They look like
right.
teddy bears. So we were thrilled when we had our litter, because then we actually had more than one that looked alike, and we could prove to people they really were a purebred dog. But what we also found is if you went to a dog show and you needed to go somewhere with your dog, to allow 3 to 4 times as much time as you would normally allow to do that. Because about every 20 feet, you were stopped by somebody wanting to know about the breed.
Right. I'm sure I was one of those people, because I just think they're freaking adorable.
And it happens in the public, too. We always go take the dogs to the farmer's market, and there's a lot of interest in the breed. But one of the things that we learned is, this is more specific to the Pumi, but if you say, oh, this is a Pumi, their first reaction is, oh, poodle and what? So our response that we have all the time is, this is a Pumi, a Hungarian herding dog.
Before they can say poodle.
That's right. That's right. And every single person who has ever gotten a puppy from us has had that little lecture, and they learn very quickly that they have to say, this is a Pumi, a Hungarian herding dog.
Right. All in one breath.
Yes, absolutely. So, so what we did a lot of was just grow the club for a number of years and grow the breed and educate more people. And this was, well, it took us 11 years from the time we formed the club in 2005, and then we were recognized, finally got full status in 2016. But a lot of that time is just spent in selling puppies and selling people on the breed and getting the dogs out there. Now, one of the things that happened about 2011, I think it was, AKC changed their rules so that if there was a Foundation Stock Service breed parent club, they would be allowed to hold performance and companion events, AKC licensed performance and companion events. And that was new. That was like new to everybody. So the first thing we did was hold AKC licensed herding instinct tests at our national. We didn't go as far as having a herding trial, but just held the instinct tests. We later added a obedience and rally trials just a few years ago before we were AKC. And then we've now added regular herding trials and agility trials. But you could hold any of those while the club is still, you know, in a provisional Foundation Stock Service status.
Okay, and so the process with FSS, Tom, maybe you can help me with this. You go from FSS to miscellaneous to AKC. What is that? How does that work?
Okay, in FSS, you can only show at open shows, which are shows specifically for the new breeds, and they only allow FSS and miscellaneous breeds. And just to make it easier for the novice, professional handlers are only allowed to show dogs that they own. But once you get into miscellaneous, they do hold miscellaneous classes at the regular AKC shows, as this is a way to educate the judges as well as educate the public.
Okay, so I thought that was important, that you need to distinguish that there's FSS, but that's not the same as miscellaneous.
No, FSS is the first step. Before you can apply for miscellaneous, you have to have 150 dogs registered with the Foundation Stock Service, and you have to have a breed standard that is an AKC format. When you're at an open show, the FSS breeds are allowed to use the FCI, which is the International Canine Organization standard.
Okay, good. Good distinction. That helps a lot. Okay, so where do you see Pumis going? Are you guys seeing like a huge like boon in your population now that their adorable little faces are everywhere? Or I mean, seriously, I mean, these are like about the cutest things in the world.
Well, they certainly are everywhere. And AKC put out a press release last summer. We got regular status on July 1. And on June 22nd, they put out a press release. And we were inundated with requests for information, NPR called, we did an interview with them, and then more people copied what other people had written, and it was all over the internet. What we learned really quickly is that a lot of that information that was copied wasn't entirely correct. And what came across in the end was, oh, this is this cute little lap dog, you know. And we just can't emphasize enough that a Pumi is a working dog. They have a working temperament. They need a job. They're very active. They're very intelligent. But this is not a dog that you just sit and watch TV with all day long. So we've been trying to do some re-education of the public to have them understand that this is a very smart dog that needs both mental and physical stimulation. And so we've changed some of our brochures that we hand out at the Meet the Breeds and that sort of thing to make sure that people understand before they decide they want to get a Pumi that they have the right family to match up with that Pumi temperament.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And, you know, I think this is something that a lot of us, you know, involved with Purebred Dogs and the American Kennel Club, two things that I want to close out with. Number one, talking about just the preservation of a piece of world history. Okay, the Pumi is a piece of Hungarian history. This is a living, breathing piece of history. And I think it's awesome. And I'd like to talk just a little bit about how you guys feel about being sort of the curators of that piece of history.
I never really thought about it. You know, we don't have any other breeds now. We are totally, totally Pumi people. And everything that we've done has been for the love of the breed and for preserving that great Pumi temperament and the ease of care, the intelligence. And it's just a matter of preserving all of that for everybody else. And one of the things that we wanted to sell the breed, because it's such a great breed that we wanted other people to be able to appreciate what a great breed it was too.
And I think one important thing is we are trying to preserve it as the Hungarian breed it is and not change it into an American breed.
Absolutely. There's some really important aspects of that. The temperament is one, but the unique coat of the Pumi is the other. And they have a very curly coat that's very easy care, and we want to make sure that we maintain that type of coat so that it doesn't end up looking like a little puffball and make it hard to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that, I think, is just an amazing piece of the conversation. I also think that it's very, very interesting to me to have watched over the course of probably the last 10 or 15 years that you guys have been involved. So you'll have seen this. I've been really impressed with the American Kennel Club's, I guess, maybe desire, or maybe it's the public's desire. I don't know. What's the driving force? We see a lot more dogs. We've added, 20 or 30 breeds just in the last couple of years. You know, I see so many more new breeds coming in consistently than we did in the early days of my involvement in the sport. What's your take on that?
I think that people are traveling more than they used to. Certainly, if I hadn't decided to go to the World Dog Show, I mean, that changed our life, you know. I'd never been to Europe before. If I had not gone, you know, I mean, somebody else obviously would have started importing them. But I think because people are traveling more and they're seeing these breeds and they want to support them. One of the other things that I think is really important, and we as breeders need to seriously look at this, is this breed is very, very healthy, easy to breed, easy to whelp. Puppies are healthy because when this was a shepherd's dog, they were whelped out in the barns and they had them on their own. And if the puppies didn't survive, they didn't survive. And if they didn't herd well,
they didn't survive.
They didn't survive.
Yeah, right.
And because of the way they took care of them, which in these days we would almost consider abuse, those dogs became easy to take care of because they had to survive. And I think it's very, very important for us to maintain that breedability and the healthiness and the open pedigrees, meaning not closely line or inbreeding the dogs.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a significant gene pool in order to be able to do that? You know, I just did a couple interviews with other people. They're talking about gene puddles. Betty Ann Stenmark talking about Dandy Denmont, and they just don't
That's
have anything to work with.
Right.
So do you guys have that gene pool to work with?
We do. And one of the things we had to do was assuage the feelings of the first person that we got our Pumi from in Hungary when we did not go back to her for our second dog or third, because we had to get different lines. And so we've visited a number of breeders in Hungary and imported dogs from different kennels so that we would have some diversity in the breeding. And the same thing, there's quite a few Pumis in the Scandinavian countries. And so we've imported a dog from Sweden and we have frozen semen from Finland. So it's been really important to keep those pedigrees fairly open and not do too much close breeding.
I think one thing that is important for people who are looking at these new to us breeds is do not just buy them. You need to be willing and able to travel so you can build relationships with the breeders around the world. And this takes time. I think we've probably made at least 10 trips to Europe or more. And these days, you know, we've got to go to the World Dog Show so we can meet with all our Pumi friends from around the world, but we have personal relationships with these people, and because of this, we were able to import good dogs.
Right. So reaching out and building that network is a huge and important part of the puzzle of putting together healthy dogs for you.
It is. Absolutely.
It is. And it can't be done completely over the internet or phone calls or that. It has to become personal.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the answer in a lot of things in dogs, frankly.
Yes.
Right. Well, and Facebook certainly helps because we know of most of the litters that have been bred around the world. So if there's particular pedigrees that we're looking for, then we would know if something's getting bred. So Facebook, we have a lot of Facebook friends, and almost all of them are Pumi people, you know, because we find out what's going on worldwide in the breed.
And the other one that's funny is that's how we discovered Skype, was as a way to talk to our friends all over the world that we could afford.
I know. I'm telling you, Skype is like my favorite thing in the world.
Right.
Okay, so really quick, in closing, you guys, on the podcast I talk a lot about, okay, so what's sort of the future of purebred dogs? Do you guys feel like introducing the new breeds, new to us, as you said, new breeds to the United States, do you think that that's really helping develop and extend and encourage the purebred dog sports for future generations?
I think it is, but I also want to say I think the biggest key to the puzzle is that we have to educate the AKC judges to know the breed so they know what they are looking at.
And we've spent a lot of time doing that. We've done probably over 20 judges' seminars to educate the breed, and that's something that's really, really important for a parent club to do, and a lot of new ones are not doing it. But I would like to say that I think one of the reasons the Pumi is being very successful right now is not because of shows, but because of agility. They are incredible agility dogs. And, in fact, a Pumi won the 16-inch class at the Yukonuba shows 2 years in a row. We've got one on the world team. I mean, they're really good. And where the majority of the owners are in Pumis are not in confirmation. They're in performance. And I believe that the confirmation is probably going to stay about where it is, but for people love doing things with their dogs, and that's what's going to grow.
Mm-hmm. Some of the performance events, the barn hunt, and the agility, and nose work, and stuff like that.
Yeah, they just introduced scent work, which I've been doing for 3 years now, and it's a great sport.
And the herding is to watch the dogs do what they were bred to. I've gotten hooked on it, and I do quite a bit of herding, too, but still showing is my primary love.
Right. So we do confirmation, we do herding, lure coursing, we love that, nose work, a little bit of obedience. But that's what the Pumi needs, is mental and physical activity.
Right. Keep their brains active.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tom and Chris. I sure appreciate your time. This has been a wonderful and very educational. I quite enjoyed it.
Well, we
and
did.
And I hope our listeners will as well. And I look forward to talking to you guys more at the dog shows.
Yep, we'll see you at the shows.
We'll see you at the shows, Laura. And thank you for taking the time to do these.
I love it. This is a good time. You guys have a great day. Thanks so much.
All right.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.